Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the CDSL conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the interactive mode. To mute and unmute your lines, you may press star and six. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nilesh Kittur. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the CDSL conference call. From management side, we have Mr. Kiran Mehta, who is the CFO of CDSL, and Mr. Sunil Alvares, who is the MD and CEO of CDSL Ventures. Now, I request Steven to open the floor for discussion.
Participants, now your lines will be in talk mode. To mute and unmute your lines, kindly press star and six. Thank you.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, Nilesh sir, and Sunil sir. This is Mayank Babla here from Dalal & Broacha. I'll just quickly introduce ourselves and run through our company. I just first want to thank you all and Nilesh especially for arranging this call and taking the time out for us, and really want to express our appreciation for giving us the opportunity. We have with us myself. I'm a senior research analyst, and I've been covering the technology space for the last 6 years, and I've been in this industry for the last 10 years. I cover technology, media, and entertainment. We also have with us our head of research, Mr. Kunal Bhatia. Kunal?
Yeah, hi.
And we have Miraj Shah, who is also part of the research team, and he's a multi-cap analyst, and Sandeep Shah, who's an institutional sales head. If you all can say hi.
Hi, sir. Sandeep Shah, you.
Hello.
Hi, Miraj, sir.
Hi, hi, everyone.
Yes, sir. So, I'm not sure if everyone knows, but so we are a 50-year-old brokerage house, and we have all the outfits that financial services firm can offer. So we have a sell side, institutional sell side. We are the research team for the institutional sell side, and we have a retail sell side also. And also we have a buy side to our firm, which is the PMS and the AIF, which is around 700 crores worth. And we have a mutual fund department and so on and so forth. We in fact have been also our...
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just continue. Yeah. So we in fact have been also in touch with CDSL. Our backend has been in touch with CDSL quite a bit. We have also our promoters also have been very close to Cyrus sir, who was the previous MD, and also I believe Sunil sir, they have been in touch with. So yeah, so this is a quick brief about us, and yeah. Kunal, I think Kunal and Miraj will lead the questions, and I will also keep on adding. Sir, we have already extensively researched on the company and read up on a lot of these past conference calls. So many of our questions have you have indirectly already answered it, but few questions here and there we had which we wanted for our report, which if you could help us, that would be great. So we'll just right away start with the Q&A if you all are okay with it, sir.
Sure.
So Miraj and Kunal, you all can lead, and then I will keep on jumping. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, sir. So we've gone through the data on the company that is available in the public domain, and it has been very clear for us. So what we'd like to do is with the questions, there may be some repetitive questions just for purely for our understanding. We might get repetitive, but would love for you to answer all of those too. So starting with the sir, the prices that we charge to issuers and we charge to the depository participants also. which is in the end charged to the BO. So I wanted to understand that what kind of pricing regulation do we face? I believe that we face from SEBI certain, so we must be facing certain pricing regulations also. So to understand in, on the front that when could we increase the prices, or is there any reason for the prices to decrease? If I'm not wrong, that these prices are also market driven, if I'm not wrong. If that would be my first question.
So to answer your question, our income is largely coming from annual issuer charges, transaction charges, IPO corporate action charges, and thereafter there are other miscellaneous income. So annual issuer charges is driven by approval by SEBI on the rate that we may charge to any company. The structure of the charges of annual issuer charge is also available on our website, and basically it is based on admitted share capital and market folio, count of market folio, whichever is higher. So if the charge is based on market folio, it is 11 rupees per folio, and the structure, if it is based on the capital structure, then there are various slabs starting from 5,000 rupees charge up to 75,000 rupees charge. So whichever is higher is levied to a issuer. These charges are approved by SEBI. Last, I think it was approved in 2015. And historically, this charges has been approved by SEBI after expiry of every 5 years. And basically, both the depositories has to make a joint representation before SEBI. And based on our representation, SEBI considers their own viewpoint, and thereafter they approve. It was due sometime in last year to approach SEBI. However, due to pandemic, we have not yet decided as to how we will do it. And we have not approached SEBI. So currently this is the status on annual issuer charges. With respect to transaction charges, it is based on all the debits that we, debit is happening to the investor account. This charges is levied on depository participant. It starts from 5.5 rupees 50 paisa and it goes down to 4 rupees 25 paisa based on the volume that any DP generates. Similarly, the corporate action charges are based on the issuer admitted, the ISINs admitted at the time of corporate action, which I think it is 10 rupees per ISIN. So this is what the major income of CDSL covers. Sunil, you want to explain on CVL?
No, that's fine. I mean, so far as CVL charges are concerned, we levy a charge of 20 rupees on creation of a KYC, and subsequently if some other intermediary fetches that KYC, we levy a charge of 35 rupees. And there are various other products also like eKYC, eSign, etc. I'll not like to get into that right now because right now majority of our income comes from KYC. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
Just wanted to dig in a little more on the others that you said, which is a smaller component. This is directed towards Sunil, sir. So, sir, as far as this mutual fund, e-mutual fund and e-insurance is concerned, what we had a belief that this in the future also has a major scope or potential going ahead. So how the entire, I think, dematerialization, if I'm not wrong, became compulsory in 99. Can something like this also happen in the mutual fund and insurance industry? Is that viable, and would want your opinion on this in the long term, sir?
Firstly, we do not make any forward-looking statements as to how things will pan out going ahead. That is one. Point number two is that we have built the building blocks, like in terms of e-insurance, we have CDSL Insurance Repository Limited, that is CIRL, which looks after DMAT of insurance policy. So the building blocks are already in place. So as and when the regulator decides to make it mandatory or anything like that, then, I mean, investors can always use that. In fact, they don't need not even have to wait for it to become mandatory. They can steal it. Thirdly, so far as e-mutual fund is concerned, by EMF, I understand what you're trying to say. It is pertaining to eKYC. Like today, we are the largest KRAs in the country, that is the KYC registration agency. We have registered with UIDAI as an AUA, KUA, which facilitates eKYC using Aadhaar-based eKYC. So to that extent, we are ready with EMF as well. So all the solutions and the building blocks are in place. It is for these companies to take it and, you know, implement it as and when they feel necessary.
Right.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah,
I agree. You don't give forward-looking, but sir, if you could give us some sense on the scope of the same, because if
I think everybody has seen the journey of DMAT. You know, I have been with this company since 98, and I have seen the journey where people were initially reluctant to give their shares for DMAT to.
Right.
What DMAT has done to the market itself. So I think based on the fact that we put the building blocks in place, then it is anybody's guess that once, say, it becomes mandatory or investors take up to have holding policies in the electronic form, then you can figure out for yourself what the journey is going to be like.
Okay. And so currently the charges in that case for an EMF or e-insurance would be how much?
See, so far as eKYC is concerned, okay, the Aadhaar-based part costs around 10 rupees, including the UIDAI charges of about 3 rupees. Okay. So far as e-insurance is concerned, if I'm not mistaken, it is about 25 rupees per credit into the account.
25 rupees per credit into the account?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will need to reconfirm that, but if I
approximately, yeah, okay, no worries.
So, sir, the annual issue charges that you said, which is 11 rupees per folio, I just wanted to understand how is that calculated. So, is that calculated on any particular date that how many folios are present for that, and then multiplied by 11, or is it an average of throughout the financial year how many folios were present?
So annual issuer charges is generally the invoices are raised in the month of April, last week. This is again based on the capital admitted as on 31st of March. And average out during the average folios that we hold as on 31st March.
Okay.
Understood. Right. Okay, so moving ahead, so we just one small thing here. So you mentioned that every 5 years this gets evaluated by SEBI. Sir, if you could just give us some sense on what is the criteria for evaluation. So meaning if say this time the market volatility was very high and there were good amount of volumes which came in, so of course this kind of revenue would have gone up for us. So does that mean that from 11 rupees the SEBI can also bring it down, say to a 5 rupees or 7 rupees like that, or is our understanding wrong on that?
In 2015, when SEBI had reviewed this charges, they had revised, I think, up to they had given an increase of around 45%. Compared to earlier approved pricing mechanism.
Okay.
That is the history that we have as of now. What can happen is something which will be an outcome of discussion, which I cannot really give any indication at this point in time.
Okay. No, no, sir, I'm not asking for the out. I just want to understand how is that evaluated? Whether is it that if the volumes are higher, so because of taking into account the absolute total amount, will they cap it to some extent?
So the understanding is that is it related to more market participation or more volumes, or what would be the basic criteria for the revision in charges?
So meaning, if you take an example, ki at 11 rupees we were earning say of 50 crores. I'm just taking a hypothetical example, and because of the volume increase at 7 rupees also we might earn say a 70 crores. So is that how they evaluate?
So generally what happens is whenever we make a joint representation, we look at it, you know, various costs that we are incurring, what is the income that we are generating till on a historical basis, and in recent time what is the cost that we are incurring, and accordingly both the depositories put up a proposal before the SEBI. Now SEBI might not look at what we have looked at it. They may have their own criteria. They may look at profitability, return on capital, those kind of things. They may look into it, you know.
Do,
based on this, they will, SEBI will have a round of discussion with both the depositories, and thereafter they come to a conclusion. So it is totally, you know, we make our effort based on the current scenarios that are prevailing. Then it is totally depending upon SEBI, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, sir, got it, thank you.
Okay, so, sir, currently if we look, if we have approximately more than 17,000 life companies registered with us, who are issuers, so if I'm not wrong, this was close to 10,000 in FY17. Sir, could you just tell us how this trajectory that we've reached 17,000 right now, is there any particular reason such as compulsory dematerialization of certain section of companies such as unlisted companies, or any other particular reason that we've seen such an amazing jump?
So in terms of you know, admitting unlisted companies, there is one requirement specified by Ministry of Corporate Affairs that whenever any unlisted company wants to come out with any corporate action, at that point in time it is compulsory for them to have this dematerialized. So generally whenever such requirement is there at unlisted company, then they will come to any of the depositories. For unlisted company there is no compulsion for them to have to go to both the depositories. Though unlike listed and listed companies, there is a requirement that they have to get admitted with both the depositories. So you know, what you see in terms of growth is on account of new listings that come up in the last 5 years. The growth in terms of corporate action executed by such listed companies, and admission of unlisted companies. So these three is the possible reason for the growth in the count of the company.
Understood, right. So sir, just wanted to understand one more thing in that. So when a issuer company has to dematerialize, is there any, just from this understanding and technical standpoint, that do they prefer to get registered with both the depositories, or is there any reason that they would register only with CDSL or NSDL? What would be that, on that front, what would be their action? Because is there any benefit of registering on both the depositories or registering on only any single depository?
See, if an unlisted company, admit their security in only one depository, then the cost will be much lesser, na? So that is the decision factor for them. And since there is no compulsion, they might not go to both the depositories as of now.
And for listed companies, sir, so my question is regarding.
No, no, listed company is mandatory for them to get their capital admitted with both the depositories. That there is no choice given to listed company.
Okay, understood. Okay, it is mandatory.
I think what he means to ask in the unlisted space, what would drive a company in the unlisted space to come in the direction of CDSL versus NSDL?
So basically the service standard that CDSL gives for such listed company would be, you know, driving factor for them to come to CDSL. Basically our business development team has made our efforts in such a manner that a dedicated relationship manager is allotted to a group of companies, and accordingly they work out on the parameters, on the requirements that they have. So basically the service level standard is the ultimate factor, and I think that should be the contributor for and if you look at it, the history, historically there was, whenever the unlisted companies were admitting their securities with the competitor, there were no charges levied by them at that point in time. This charges has come only after ministry making it compulsory for them to get their securities admitted whenever they want to do the corporate action.
Okay.
So you may see that there are large number of companies associated with NSDL. That is because of this factor.
Okay.
So that was free for them, is it?
Yes, the charges I think come in 2018. Since 2018, the unlisted companies are admitted with an fee.
Okay.
Understood. Okay. Sir, my next question would be regarding BO accounts, the beneficiary owner accounts. I wanted to understand that out of the 5.25 crore DMAT accounts that we have, what proportion of it would be individual accounts and what proportion of it would be corporate accounts?
I need to get back on this response. I need to have some details on that.
Okay, understand.
So approximately ballpark, any idea?
Are the corporate accounts. The rest of them are mostly individual.
So sorry, your voice is echoing. We couldn't hear.
Rest are all individual accounts in the individual credit.
So if we are missing out on the first, we couldn't hear. Your voice is blanking in the first one.
Yeah. 70,000 for the count of corporate account, and the rest of them are mostly under the individual category.
Okay.
So, any particular reason that we have such a high number of individual accounts? And if I'm not wrong, on the contrary, NSDL would be having more of corporate accounts. So, I believe that, as you said previously also, there is some technological difference that we provide to depository participants, which in turn helps us get more depository participants with us. So, my question is that, is it that NSDL, the competitor, is lacking somewhere where we are progressing more? And, or is there any difference in the charges that we ask for? And what could be the possible reason that they can match up or not match up as where we are in the number, in terms of numbers?
See, NSDL started 2 years before CDSL started, and by that time it was made mandatory to institutions to settle their securities in DMAT form. So they had almost 90% of the institutional business with them. And because of that, when CDSL started, we started with a retail model. That's why you see the higher number of retail accounts with CDSL as compared to the competitor. And even number of depository participants is also double the count of competitor. So that is the major reason.
So in the given in the past 2 years also there have been a lot of account openings. I believe that the number of account openings have maximum have been with us. So is there any reason that these account openings were not with NSDL and with CDSL? Any particular reason regarding that? I believe that it is because of Zerodha and Upstox and Angel One registering with becoming a participant to the CDSL depository. So, is there any reason in terms of costing that we provide or network that we provide that makes it easier for them to register with us and not with NSDL? My question is this because going ahead also we could see more registrations of depository participants coming to us compared to our peer. So which would be beneficial, incrementally beneficial for us? That is the, I believe that is the starting point for us to earn more.
So net, do we still have that moat of getting more of these depositories with us, or even now CDSL is on the same page? Or sorry, NSDL is on the same page?
No, since our depository count is almost twice that of competitor, and the depository participants are the main contributor to the increase in demat accounts. So they, the names which you have taken earlier are mostly opening up accounts with CDSL only. That is the reason you see a higher number of accounts being opened with us as compared to the competitor.
Sir, and meaning what would be the reason for that, sir? Because one thing I understand that we had allowed these participants to open online accounts. So, but that was again the thing is that is for a single holder. So the extended question was just wanted to understand, are our charges lower? Are we better on technology? And C, what happens in the future if somebody wants to open a joint account online?
A couple of things is, one is that we have closely worked with our depository participants. So there's a lot of hand-holding in terms of, starting off in terms of expanding the business as well. We do a lot of training with our depository participants. We also have put in the required technical, IT building blocks in place so that the depository participant can also seamlessly increase their business so far as their DP business is concerned. So far as charges are concerned, both of them are, both the depositories charge almost the same. That is, NSDL charges a flat rate of 5 rupees and we charge a rate starting from 550 and it goes down to 4 rupees 25 paisa depending on the number of transactions the depository participant has. So there's really not much of incentive so far as charges are concerned. We believe it's more on the side of, helping the depository participants to start and, to have a much more friendlier approach in terms of expanding their business. So to that extent, if you see, many of the large depository participants have, started off with CDSL and have continued to stay with CDSL. So if you say Angel or even an Anand Rathi or many of these large players have started off with CDSL and they continue to do business with CDSL. So also with many of the large fintechs, they joined CDSL when they were very small companies, and over a period of time, both of us have grown together. So that is now reflecting in the statistics. What you see is the statistics as of now, but we've been, we've been in association with these companies over a very long period of time. In fact, Angel Broking was one of the first, batch of depository participants which joined CDSL somewhere in, around 2000 or so. So it's been a partnership over a long period of time. In fact, there are other large DPs like Motilal or so who do only business with CDSL. So it's a journey which we have gone through, say, over the last 20 years.
Okay.
So this means that we have a better reach and service, if I'm not wrong, and this would, I think, probably still be our moat, right? So this, since we have already capitalized once on it, so this is still our moat, right?
We have done things differently at CDSL. We have tried and given solutions to these participants whenever they've come across a roadblock. So to give you an example, we were the first company in the country to come out with the KYC concept. So we started off the KYC concept in around 2006 or 2007 along with AMFI. Okay, so we ran it with the mutual funds for about 4 years, and then SEBI made it mandatory in 2011 with the KRA regulation. Only we are one of the first companies to come out with e-voting. Okay, we came out with e-voting when nobody had heard about e-voting in the country. So we were one of the first companies who launched e-voting, and then the MCA saw merit in what we were doing. They made it mandatory, and now you can just imagine the amount of paper and the convenience it has brought to investors. So the amount of paper which has actually gone out of the system, and investors are really convenient by, he has to just sit at his home and he can cast his vote without getting into the issue of, you know, casting his vote, putting it into an envelope and then mailing it to the company. So there are a lot of these things which we have done from time to time. We have given solutions on settlements to brokers. We have come out with an internet facility called EGS. And a lot of digital facilities which have really helped depository participants in, you know, in handling and, you know, servicing their investors as well.
Understood, sir. So that would be the reason why we have seen a jump in the e-voting companies between 2013 and 15, because it was made mandatory.
We are the market leaders so far as e-voting is concerned. So there are all types of service providers right now. Okay, and out there's a lot of competition which happens on pricing as well. So ultimately, it is the pricing and the service which plays a large part in so far as e-voting is concerned.
Right. So just an add-on question. So what are the charges that we levy? And the charges we levy is to the company, right? The issuer company.
That's right, yeah. So we charge about 1 rupee per folio, okay, which is uploaded into our system. And that again, depending on volumes, most of the e-voting service providers do give a discount to companies.
Understood. Okay. Sir, one question
here, Mayank, if you allow.
Yes, please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this 1 rupee per folio, Sandeep Shah here.
Yeah.
This 1 rupee per folio will be depending on the actual voter who have voted, or it will be just based on the number of folios which existed pre-voting like?
No, it is based on the number of folios which are uploaded into my system.
Okay, so all...
So if you have 100 folios and only 10 have cast their vote, I will still charge you for uploading 100 folios.
Correct, fine. Okay. Yeah, continue, ma'am.
Understood, sir. Okay. So my next question was regarding the account maintenance charges that we charge to corporates. I think that is 500 rupees annually. We do not charge anything to individuals, right?
That's right, yeah. Yes.
So is there any scope that any sort of charges would be introduced going ahead, or was there any previously any charges being levied to individuals also? No, my question is because we have a lot of individual DMAT account holders.
See, when we started off in 98, we had started levying a charge to investors, but subsequently we stopped charging that because the competitor was not charging those charges. So after that, we do not charge any charges, but the depository participants do charge, levy a charge on the investors as they are and maintenance fees.
Understood, sir. Right. Sir, I was going through the presentation, Q2 presentation, and one point I wanted to understand is that you mentioned something regarding SEBI special projects. Can you just explain what exactly SEBI special project that we that would that is I think also consisting our in our revenue contribution?
Actually, before that, sir, if we that 500 rupees per DP, so is there any fixed any other charge to that, or that is the only charge?
For corporate, yes, that's the only charge.
Okay.
And over and above, you have the debit charge per instruction whichever comes through. So that is the debit charge of 5 rupees 50 paise to 4 rupees 25 paise, which we levy on the depository participant based on the number of transactions.
So, and for the software that you provide and everything, so there is there any other maintenance charge for that to the DP depository fund?
Yes, there is.
So
there is an annual charge of the on the software to the DP. So that is how it works.
And that's a, what is that based on? Is that a, means a based on some unit, or it's a how do we you know calculate that, or how is it charged?
It's a flat charge per participant. It is levied per annum.
Okay. And it is a very minimal charge. Okay. In last quarter, we had earned around 85 lakhs.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah? Got it. Understood. Okay. It's a small company. Understood. Yeah. If I could ask, I just wanted to direct my question towards the technology cost. So I wanted to understand this, our technology infrastructure, we completely handle it, so it's completely insourced in-house, or we outsource some of this tech to another IT services company?
So for the technology cost, most of the technology are inbuilt at CDSL, okay, and we have our internal officials who handle it, as well as we have a vendor that handles that.
Okay, okay. And so have we moved to cloud, or we have not yet moved to cloud as far as our backend is concerned?
So currently, all the servers, all the data that are stored are at CDSL end.
Okay. Okay. So any plans on that? Because will it be eventually means move to cloud? Because I've heard that means I know that there are many benefits, at least cost wise. So any plans in the pipeline for this?
Whenever we thought of, whenever we think of such an development, we'll announce it in public domain.
Okay, okay, understood. Right, sir. And it, this was my my another question was regarding the margins. So it's a two-part question. I'll come in the first part. In terms of margins, what levers do we have at hand? I mean, both employee cost and tech cost can be considered as a lever. I just want to understand what headroom do we have. I'm not asking for any guidance or any future outlook, but just want to understand what headroom we have for.
If you look at our half yearly results, if you look at our half yearly results, you will notice that, you know, what are the.
Hello?
You know, main driver for cost are employee cost, technology cost, regulatory cost, and thereafter the other ancillary cost which a normal company has to incur. Now, employee cost, you know, it is going to be aligned with inflationary pressure, and on an if you ask me on a percentage basis, generally the employee cost is you know around 10 to 15% increase is considered every year.
Okay.
If you compare last year, last 3 years, you will notice this.
Okay.
Technology cost is again, we are heavily going to, or rather we are, you know, developing or implementing regulatory push that regulator is asking us to do. For example, if you notice, we had implemented EDS in the first quarter. Thereafter, now we are implementing 6 attributes. So all this development that we keep on doing is going to impact the regulatory cost. Third major increase in contributor in cost will be the regulatory fees. Now, if the SEBI regulation specifies that 5% of our operating profit we are supposed to give it to investor protection fund. Okay. And apart from that, we have to also contribute to SEBI certain percentage of our issuer fees. So these three are the major cost contributor, and thereafter, you know, whatever we do, the cost will be associated with the scale of the operations. I hope I have answered your question.
Yes, just say you said that around apart from the investor protection fund, you said 3% of HUF you mentioned.
No, I said certain fees are paid to SEBI based on the income that we generate with respect to issuer fees, etc. So this information are available in public domain. If you
right.
if you search, you will find it.
Okay, got it. Okay, understood, sir. Yeah, Miraj, you can carry on now.
Yeah, so just clarifying on the last part, you said 5% of our operating profit we SEBI has asked us to pay to the investor protection fund, right? So
yes.
we do that annually, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, understood. So moving on, from in our revenue contribution, there is a line item as online data charges, which is 16% of our revenue. I just wanted to understand what exactly comes in the part of online data charges.
So when you know, at the start of our call, we had explained you components of CDSL and CVL. So Sunil had explained that the KYC that we generate and the KYC that get fetched by other KRA from CVL, that is the income.
Understood. So on that front, sir, we earn on KYC records. So is it what we earn, is it based on creating, fetching or processing or part of all three?
Both. First is creation, and thereafter whenever it is fetched, we earn on that.
Okay. Right. So both of these charges would be from, so creation would be charged to the individual, right? The creation part?
Agency.
Agency, and fetching is also to the agency.
Investor will not get charged, agency get charged.
So what would be the charges, sir, over here?
So initially Sunil had said that it was 20 rupees for creating and 35 rupees for fetching.
Okay, 20 and 35, okay.
Which agency?
And sir, the agency, who is the agency? Can you just explain that?
They are basically all market intermediaries like brokers and, you know, whoever's capital market intermediary.
Understood, right. Okay. Sir, under CDSL Ventures, we are registered as KUA, we are also registered as RTA, GST service provider, certifying authority also. So I wanted to understand in the RTA part, we have 740 companies roughly to which we are the registrar and transfer agent. So is this duty different from what an RTA is to mutual fund and what an RTA is to other companies, other corporates?
Yeah, that's right. Like if we are currently focusing more on unlisted companies, so most of these companies are, I would say almost all these companies are unlisted companies, and they have very small amount of shareholders. And we also have a very small unit so far as RTAs are concerned. So our focus has been mostly on unlisted companies right now.
Right. Okay. Understood on that part. Sir, I was complicated regarding the KYC part. I just wanted to simplify that eKYC is what we do. Now there is another option as CKYC, central KYC. If I'm not wrong, it is done physically. So I wanted to understand what is the difference between eKYC and CKYC, because CKYC data is recorded centrally. So it is recorded with any one particular party. I just wanted to understand the difference between eKYC and CKYC.
See, eKYC is what is done through UIDAI, okay, where you do an Aadhaar-based verification and the data is downloaded to the intermediary directly from UIDAI. So far as CKYC is concerned, it is another agency set up by the central government under the aegis of CERSAI, okay, and under this, the entire capital markets and financial markets, the intermediary is required to upload his KYC into that particular CKYC.
So for a broker, he has to do both the things or only one?
Yes, he is required to do both the uploads.
Okay. So because our understanding was like if CDSL, for example, if I am opening an account somewhere and CDSL has done my eKYC, so is that same thing can be used with broker B, broker C? Or because every time whenever a new account is opened, they always do it multiple number of times.
Actually, it's not required, but to be on the safer side, you need to verify whether there is any change in any details of the investor. In case there is any change in the details of the investor, you are required to update your KYC.
So that is how, meaning, in this case, it would be beneficial for CDSL because every time he does it, an income is generated.
No, on the modification side, we do not levy any charge on the...
We could get the fetching charges, no?
No, to give you an example, so say for an instance, if an investor has already done his KYC, okay, then typically the broker would fetch the record and display it to the investor online. And in case the investor feels there are certain changes to be done in his KYC record, then he has to fill in a modification form and update it with that particular broker who is displayed the record to him. And then wherever other intermediaries have fetched the record, the modification gets done centrally at the KRA and the record gets pushed to all the intermediaries who have fetched the record earlier.
Okay. So if we take an example, say I have an account with Motilal Oswal and now I open another account with ICICI Securities. So in this case, for us, two times the income would be generated or no?
No, Motilal Oswal would have paid me 20 rupees, whereas ICICI Securities will pay me 35 rupees. So in that context, if you say two times the income would be generated, that would be correct, sir.
So ICICI will be charged for fetching the...
That's right. One would be charged for creation and one would be charged for fetching.
Okay. Got it, sir. Thank you.
Okay. So my next question on CDSL Ventures is that since we are registered, we have a few roles, so KRA, KUA, GST. I wanted to understand that is there any complementary function, because all of these roles somehow provide us revenues. We generate revenues from these roles. So are they interrelated? Are they complementary? That is why we've taken up these roles. And would there be any other role that we could take up going ahead in the future, which would also be interrelated or complementary?
Yeah, many of these roles complement each other within CVL or within the group. That is how I would look at it. So like to give you an example, unlisted companies are admitted in CDSL. And to that extent, wherever possible, CDSL Ventures plays the role of an RTA. Point number two is, so far as our other businesses are concerned, like eKYC using Aadhaar-based solution or using Aadhaar-based eSign, okay? There is a SEBI 24th April circular of last year which says that now you can, do a KYC by just uploading your documents, uploading a signature, and then digitally signing that. So effectively, the e-sign and the eKYC solutions complement the KYC business. So to that extent, I would say many of the businesses complement each other.
Understood. Any other business that would complement that we would take on going ahead? Do we have any anything in progress, anything in works that we would...
Adjacencies or avenues.
Right.
Difficult to say, but for us, the way we look at it is that we believe in converting physical paper into, you know, electronic processes or digitizing the journey for investors. So wherever we see, I mean, a large amount of paper, that could be a business way which could, you know, complement the entire digital journey of the investor.
Understood, right, sir.
I just had a related question to that. Don't mean to offend, but just want to understand the threats to our business in two parts. So one would be the barriers to entry. So how CDSL was a depository which entered after NSDL. What are the barriers to entry, or if any other for any other depository to enter? And related to that threat, wanted to understand that with the recent developments in blockchain, so a lot of advancement has happened in terms of tech, that settlement and everything can happen, you know, and under a blockchain network can happen immediately also. Do we have anything in the works for that, or what is your view on these two threats, please?
See, on the threat of a third depository coming in, it is possible. We are not saying it's not possible, because the depository, the act by itself is called as the Depositories Act. So there is provision for multiple depositories. But it is not as simple as just starting a company or a depository and, you know, you will have investors flocking onto you. You need to understand that when an investor opens an account, he will like to see that all the companies which he's holding stock are admitted in that depository. Okay, so there has to be, first and foremost is that if a third depository comes in, he has to first get in all the companies, so that it does not inconvenience the investor. That is, you know, he's holding some 10 stocks in one depository and another 5 stocks in one depository. So it's not only that, plus they will have to ramp up their services to match up with the other depositories. So I think that itself becomes a huge challenge for any newcomer who comes in.
Got it. So, and as far as the technology threat,
and so far as blockchain is concerned, we have evaluated all of those things, and we don't really feel much of a threat, because we are currently following a T+2 settlement on the exchange, and SEBI is pushing on a T+1 settlement. So, we are geared up to handle it. Also.
Got it. So, thank you.
And okay, so I have a couple of more questions. One is regarding MF Central, sir. I think that was discussed in the Q2 call. I just wanted to understand what exactly is this business that we are getting in. What exactly is MF Central?
See, MF Central is a centralized portal developed by the mutual fund industry, so that and. Today what happens is in case the investor has to do any queries or transactions, he has to go to various portals. So the idea was to come up with a central portal where he could query on any of his holdings across the mutual fund industry. So that was the purpose of MF Central. Plus, in case he had any grievances, etc., he could also track what is the progress on those redressal of those grievances. So not only that, it was also decided that even the people who are holding, or the investors who are holding the mutual fund units in the DMAT account, okay, they could also through MF Central access what is the, you know, status of their holdings, etc., transactions on the MF Central.
Understood. So, sir, how would we earn over here with more investors coming in transacting over here?
No, from a revenue standpoint, I would say it is neutral right now in the sense that currently the MF Central is being developed by the RTAs of the mutual fund, and we are just joining them as a depository where we will be sharing the information of investors who are holding units in the DMAT form, and they also want to view their holdings on the MF first.
Understood. Okay. My last question would be regarding the IFSC that we've registered in GIFT City. I believe that over there we are going to act as a depository for international securities. So from a very basic layman perspective, would I as an investor would be able to open an account over there, and would I be able to invest into foreign securities?
I think you have to be registered as a international investor under the IFSC guideline. As a retail Indian investor, I don't think you'll be allowed to open an account there.
Yes, sir, correct, because I believe there is some, you have to submit your papers to RBI and get yourself registered if I'm trying to invest in anything like a Google or Apple or something like that. So, but if that is a registered user, would he be able to do that through CDSL or?
I'm really not quite aware. I mean, I'll need to check
okay.
this and, you know, come back to you on this.
And between the investor and CDSL, there would be a depository, participant present, right? Like
that's
we have.
That's right.
So something like a vested, which offers, services like investing in U.S. market. So that would be the intermediary, right? Would you were referring to?
Hey, come again. I didn't get your question.
So vested is a company or an app which allows retail investors to invest in U.S. or global markets. So would that be your potential client, or they would have a depository in the U.S.? Or how does it work, if you could clarify that?
No, the participant would be here in the GIFT City itself.
Okay.
So, but for example, even these larger banks like Kotak Securities and ICICI Securities, even they nowadays very well advertise for this invest into the foreign companies. So for them, are we the depository?
No, I have not seen these advertisements. You'll have to be, you know, more specific what you are talking about.
The question.
So for example, in case of if I have an account in Kotak Securities, so there they do give me an option that if you want to invest into say Apple, you can invest through Kotak Securities.
Yeah, but we will not be the depository for those securities.
Okay.
So
okay.
That is not coming to the IFSC route.
Acha. Okay.
This is specifically for the IFSC route where we will be, you know, holding securities for that particular segment.
Okay.
So we are hearing a lot about this GIFT City and all, but frankly, if you can throw some light as to what exactly is going to happen in next couple of years, including whatever you can share about what BAC is doing over there, it will be really helpful, because we have been hearing a lot about this, but frankly not aware exactly what can happen over there.
Honestly, again, I said we cannot make any forward-looking statements what's going to happen over there. And secondly, what BIC is also doing, I would not like to comment on this call.
Sir, another understanding point over there is that the depository participants, which are somewhere around 590 to 600, would they be automatically registered with us in IFSC, or would there be separate registration, or we would basically starting from scratch with whichever participant wants to register with us? What would be the procedure over there? Because if they're directly registered with us over there, it would be an added advantage
I believe. So because we are just trying to analyze the scope of CDSL in this particular segment.
No, you would need to register separately all over again, just as we have as a depository registered separately out there. The participants too will have to register separately with us. So if you are a participant in CDSL, you do not automatically qualify to become a participant on the IFC. And secondly, I would also like to inform you, there's a separate IFC authority under which you need to, you know, make an application and get approval there.
So what is the, on a big picture, what is the scope CDSL has in this entire IFSC thing?
The scope is, we add one more segment which includes, you know, the IFC to CDSL's entire portfolio of services that we offer. So it will not be only, what to say, depository for the local investors using CDSL, but as IFC, they can offer these services to international investors as well who come onto the IFC.
Right. So, sir, I was going through one of the previous transcripts.
We may have to end the call. This may be the last question for our...
Yeah. So, we understand. Yeah, understood.
So, just last question that I wanted to understand it, that regarding one of the previous transcripts that I was going through, we would be participating with the asset classes such as bullions and derivatives also. Am I correct in understanding that? So I just wanted to understand what all asset classes would be offered in the IFSC. As an investor, what all asset classes would I be able to transact in is what exactly I want to understand.
In my my knowledge, it would be similar to what are the asset classes which are currently being offered under CDSL. And going forward, I understand there would also be a gold bullion exchange as well.
Understood. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, sir.
You cleared a lot for us, and we will get back on this. We will start working more. We have a lot more clarity regarding this. So thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, with that, we conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.